Welcome to another AAT podcast, where today I will be talking about employer compliance matters and providing some reminders about some of the more important issues for employers and their AAT advisors. Since I last covered this topic in a podcast, HMRC has continued investing its resources into employer compliance activities, with visits to many of our employer clients around the country. I've been involved with a variety of HMRC employer compliance inspections, often being called in by employers or their accountants to assist when HMRC officers start making large demands for back income tax and national insurance contributions. HMRC's new penalty regime, designed to encourage our employers and employer clients to be more compliant or face the risk of suffering much more severe penalties, is now in place. That places much more emphasis on disclosure and the need for employers to be able to demonstrate that they are taking greater care. HMRC has replaced its COP3 guidance leaflet with a set of new employer compliance fact sheets, which I will discuss later in this podcast. The General and Special Commissioners are no more, and we have a new tribunal system for appeals, although that is a subject for another day. As I have said many times before, any failure by an employer to comply with what is a very strict tax deduction payment and reporting regime is likely to result in an employer being landed with a large bill from HMRC. This will include any PAYE income tax and Class 1, Class 1A or Class 1B national insurance contributions that the employer has failed to deduct and pay over to HMRC, plus, of course, the extra cost of an interest charge, and now more significant sums in terms of penalties. The 2008-09 P35 employer annual returns and P14 summaries should have been submitted long ago, and if not, penalties of £100 per month or part month for each batch or part batch of 50 persons on the return are now running up. If the returns that were submitted are wrong, a penalty not exceeding the difference between the amounts returned and the amount that should have been returned will be charged by HMRC. The 2008-09 P11Ds, the returns of expense payments and benefits in kind, and the P11DB, return of Class 1A NICs and employer declaration, should also have been submitted by the time you're listening to this podcast. An initial penalty not exceeding £300 and daily penalties not exceeding £60 per day can be imposed for late submission of Forms P11D or indeed Form P9D. And if the P11D submitted were incorrect, a penalty not exceeding £3,000 per incorrect P11D could be charged by HMRC. If the P11DB return is late, a penalty of £100 per month or part month for each batch or part batch of 50 earners for whom Class 1A is payable will be charged. And if the P11DB was wrong, a penalty not exceeding the difference between the Class 1A NICs returned and the Class 1A NICs which should have been returned will again be charged by HMRC. However, there can be a double whammy, because a failure to comply with the P11D and P11DB reporting requirements will often result in the employer voluntarily paying the unpaid income tax due on any employee's taxable expenses or benefits in kind that were omitted from the annual P11D return or understated. And this is in addition to the employer's liability for any unpaid Class 1A national insurance contributions on the taxable expenses and benefits in kind that should have been reported. Nowadays, HMRC will normally want to pursue the directors themselves for income tax liability through a self-assessment inquiry, which the directors might be somewhat unhappy about if mistakes have been made by the company. Where an employer declines to pay the employee's income tax liability on a grossed-up basis, HMRC will seek to charge what might be expensive and would be non-deductible penalties. So today we should be asking if our employers or employer clients have submitted all their employer returns for 2008-09, both accurately and on time, and where any of these returns may still be outstanding, we need to take some urgent action to put this right. Nothing much has changed in the identification of potential employer compliance liabilities regularly targeted by HMRC. And let me look at some of these. The first one, PAYE and Class 1 National Insurance Contribution failures on payments for casual labour, round sum expense payments, or gross payments to workers wrongly treated as self-employed. Here, HMRC will seek recovery of the unpaid income tax, usually at the basic rate, plus primary and secondary Class 1 National Insurance contributions where the earnings exceed the earnings threshold. Within this sort of pay-as-you-earn failure field, we could have lots of different things. Casual labour, as I've mentioned, and we could have minor items such as topping up of mobile phone bills or Oyster cards. Next, they will target Class 1A on unreported or understated taxable expense payments or benefits in kind, often looking very carefully at company car and fuel benefits, which have been omitted from the returns. The question to ask, are there any company cars that have not been reported on Form P11D, and if not, why? Is there any evidence to support an argument that the cars are pool cars or that they're business use only cars? HMRC would really be looking for some strong evidence to support that. What mileage records have been kept, and are they good enough to satisfy HMRC that no private fuel has been provided? Remembering that only £1 of private fuel is enough to give rise to a company car fuel scale charge. Another question to be raised by the employer compliance officer will be the rate of business mileage reimbursement. And potentially there could be a settlement to be sought if excessive rates have been reimbursed. We have the statutory rates for directors or employees using their own cars on company business, which is still only 40p for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p for any additional business miles. If payments have been made in excess of those statutory rates, and or if any private mileage has been reimbursed, the excess should have been reported at Section E of the P11D return. There are no statutory rates for company car drivers, but we do have the HMRC advisory fuel rates that are published on its website and are normally changed twice a year in January and July. In the last year or so, we've seen quite a few changes to fuel rates, and so these rates have also changed. The question we need to be asking ourselves and our clients is whether we've paid in excess of those rates, and if the answer is yes, whether the employer has evidence to support a higher rate. For example, HMRC will accept large engine cars, 5-litre cars, for example, which are in the fleet, will require a higher rate of reimbursement. Again, if there's evidence to support the fact that the cars are used for driving at low speeds, urban motoring in towns and cities, that will support a higher rate of reimbursement being paid. Here again, the importance of accurate business mileage recording cannot be overemphasised, because HMRC will impose fuel scale charges on company car drivers if the mileage recording is poor. Another point the revenue will target is income tax and Class 1B national insurance contributions on amounts omitted from or understated in a PAYE settlement agreement, because these will be reviewed from time to time. They will look at statutory sick pay, statutory maternity pay, statutory adoption pay, statutory paternity pay, student loans and tax credits will all be reviewed, and we need to remember that HMRC is responsible for policing the national minimum wage regulations. So again, questions to be asked of our employers or our employer clients, are we on top of these things? The construction industry has always been high on the agenda of HMRC, and nothing has changed on that front. Employers who are also contractors and probably subcontractors will continue to receive special attention when the taxman calls. They will be looking for untaxed payments and incorrect returns, as well as the employment status of subcontract workers, should any of the payments made have gone through the payroll. These are difficult times, and many employers are laying off workers and making lump sum termination payments that will come under scrutiny to the extent that they have been made tax or national insurance contributions free. Even when employees have generally been made redundant or otherwise lost their employment, any restricted covenant or contractual payments made on termination of the employment will be fully liable to income tax and Class 1 national insurance contributions. HMRC officers will also be looking closely at any tax repayments in lieu of notice or any compensation payment to see whether it is genuine compensation and within the exemption provisions. Another popular issue for review by HMRC officers is entertainment, looking for taxable staff entertainment, including the costs of meals enjoyed locally to the business that do not qualify as allowable business travel and subsistence expenditure, and any other meals which may be regarded as a reward and not as genuine business travel or subsistence costs. We have some exemptions for Christmas parties, but again, the rules have to be followed. Generally available to all, a limit of £150 per annum, which is not an allowance. Therefore, one party costing £160 would be fully taxable. Another issue which commonly crops up is that of non-qualifying share and share option schemes where pay-as-you-earn has not been operated and Class 1 national insurance has not been deducted. Revenue officers will be looking at this all the time. Now, that list is not exhaustive, but it includes some of the more common issues that HMRC employer compliance officers will be looking for when they visit your employer or your employer client. We must always remember that the PAYE and CIS regulations require an employer or contractor to pay over the amount of tax that is deductible, not just the amount of tax they have deducted, and that where there is any shortfall, it is likely to be recovered from the employer. Next, I want to remind you about the PAYE regulations and the reporting requirements. First of all, employers are required to keep records of payments and deductions in respect of directors and employees, including casual employees, and must record all payments made, all deductions including income tax and Class 1 national insurance contributions, any statutory payments including statutory sick pay, statutory maternity pay, statutory adoption pay, and statutory paternity pay, student loan deductions, and then expense payments and or benefits in kind. The detailed records that have to be kept include wages books, timesheets, cash books and petty cash records, and even other records such as the certificates required to justify the lower rate of NIC's deduction or where there is an exemption from NICs, such as the age exemption certificate. Plus, of course, we have Forms P46 for new joiners, Form P38S for students employed in holiday periods, and a record of payments made to subcontractors and to HMRC. We now have in-year online filing for larger employers, which may mean that some records do not have to be retained in paper form, but HMRC officers will still want to see records are being maintained. PAYE and Class 1 NIC records must be retained for 3 years after the end of the tax year, plus, of course, keeping the current tax year records. Although, in all fairness, most employers keep such records for longer periods for pension reasons and other purposes. Problems do arise where records are not kept, particularly where casual employees are used in the business and Forms P46 have not been obtained or retained. Income tax may be sought at a later date where perhaps no tax was due or where emergency code could have been applied, giving allowances to the casual worker instead of income tax being charged at the basic rate on every pound paid to that worker. I currently am advising on a number of cases in different industries where this is a problem. Payroll records must be kept for casual employees, even for what I call a true casual, that is someone who was employed for 1 week or less with no expectation of future work. The minimum requirement is to keep the name, address and the amount paid to that worker. Part of the annual year-end reporting requirement for employers is to submit a Form P38A employer supplementary return for any employee for whom the employer has not completed a Form P14 or a P38S, the student form. These forms are too often overlooked. Students can be employed during the school holidays without income tax being deducted from the payments they receive, irrespective of the amount of those earnings. But, and it's a big but, the student must sign a Form P38S before the first payment is made. P38S forms do not have to be submitted to HMRC after the end of the tax year, but they must be retained for at least 3 years after the end of that tax year. It is important to remember that HMRC compliance officers will be looking for and at these payroll records when they visit your employer or your client. As I said in the introduction, HMRC's new employer compliance fact sheets have replaced the old COP 3 leaflets that were sent out when arranging an inspection visit. Inspection visits are normally arranged by the issue of a standard letter, although sometimes an HMRC officer will telephone the employer first to arrange the date, the place, and the time of the visit. There is nothing sinister about that advance telephone call, and there is no big problem in changing dates if it's convenient for the business to make an alteration. What would be a concern to me is if an officer turns up at the business without giving any advance warning by telephone or letter, because that would be unusual and may of course be inconvenient to the employer, who may then want to seek immediate professional advice. HMRC will issue the employer compliance fact sheets in advance of the inspection visit. The first of these is the EC/FS1, that is the fact sheet 1, Employers and Contractors Reviewing Your Records. This fact sheet provides an overview of the compliance checks and gives you an insight into the arranging and preparing for an inspection visit. There is another one, EC/FS2, for large employers and contractors, again about reviewing your records. It's a similar document to the first one, but it's for large employers, and it also refers to the involvement of a customer relationship manager, who will likely be the contact for the employer when an inspection takes place. That's providing there's a CRM attached to the business. The Employer Compliance Fact Sheet 3 is about compliance checks, what happens during and at the end of a check. It gives employers information on what will happen if something is found to be wrong, how overpayments and underpayments will be dealt with, including where HMRC will ask the employer to pay any unpaid tax on behalf of the employees. It explains what happens next in terms of a contract settlement or formal action where agreement cannot be reached. The next fact sheet is the EC/FS4, Compliance Checks Penalties. And if this is issued with the initial letter, there should be some concern, because it will serve as a warning that HMRC already has reason to believe that there has been a PAYE failure, perhaps in submitting an incorrect return. However, HMRC are not always right about these things, but this is a sign that we need to proceed with caution and take extra care in the handling of the inspection visit. Finally, there is the EC/FS5, Employers and Contractors Compliance Checks, Your Obligations. This is the fact sheet which will not be used very often. It warns that HMRC will take action if faced with non-cooperation. It is intended to help employers understand their obligations, and will probably be used very rarely and only when HMRC sees a problem in obtaining cooperation from you or the client. As I've already said, the 2008-09 P11D deadline has passed, and many of you will agree what a time-consuming task that can prove to be. Well, it can be made much easier by removing most business expenses and perhaps some benefits in kind from the reporting chain using a P11D dispensation. What is a dispensation? Well, a dispensation is a notice of nil liability. It's granted by virtue of Section 65 of ITPA 2003, and it's issued by an officer of the board, normally the employer's pay-as-you-earn tax office, or the area compliance office with which it's linked. The employer has to satisfy the officer that the expenses paid or reimbursed and the benefits provided would be matched by a tax deduction. A PLMD dispensation should include business travel and subsistence, business entertaining, business telephone calls and professional subscriptions, plus any other items of specific relevance to a particular business. All of these should be excluded from the reporting chain if they're items that could be matched by a tax deduction. The P11DX dispensation application form can be used to apply, or you can make a written application by letter setting out the full circumstances. A P11DX form can be completed on the HMRC CD-ROM and then printed off and sent with a covering letter. I would provide examples of the standard expense claim form and perhaps a mileage form, and I might include copies of some completed expense claim forms. HMRC should not, indeed will not, use the PLMD dispensation application as a reason to carry out an employer compliance review or to undertake a PAYE audit. These assurances are constantly being given by HMRC, and HMRC is actively trying to encourage employers, even smaller employers, to apply for dispensations to reduce the amount of reporting that they have to deal with. My advice is always to consider the items to be included in the dispensation and the controls that are in place before applying for the dispensation. It would always be sensible to carry out a pre-application review of procedures and of items included on the expense claims for the directors and employees. If you're then satisfied that good controls exist to ensure that only bona fide business expenses are claimed and that deduction would be obtainable, why not submit a P11D dispensation application now? The application can be backdated to the 6th of April 2009 to reduce the amount of reporting for the P11Ds to be done next year. In summary, employer compliance is an issue that is too often off the radar for most employers, but it is an important issue, especially because of the new penalty regime and the way that it rewards compliant employers that take reasonable care and openly discloses errors made. The new suspended penalties offer an incentive to employers to be able to demonstrate that reasonable care. In this podcast, I've considered some recent changes and revisited some old ground, highlighting the issues that are regularly targeted by HMRC employer compliance officers, and the new guidance that HMRC provides in relation to employer compliance inspections. I hope you found it worthwhile listening. Thank you.